Growing up, I loved playing computer games, but I have not found something in adulthood that scratches that same itch. Video games don't do it. I can't use that controller. It's just not it for me. But oh my goodness, I am so glad I recently started playing June's Journey. Okay, June's Journey is like I Spy meets Carmen Sandiego, meets The Sims, meets horror movies. It's so wild and it's so, so fun to play. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game with a captivating detective story taking you back to the glamour of the 1920s with a diverse cast of characters. Each new scene takes you further through a thrilling murder mystery story that sets the main protagonist, June Parker, on a quest to solve the murder of her sister and uncover her family's many secrets. June is fabulous. She has a fabulous little hat and feather in her cap. She's at this family estate on this gorgeous island that you can decorate, which you know that I love to do. And then as you're going, you go into different rooms of the house. You find clues that are going to lead to the suspicious murder of June's sister and brother-in-law. It's so dark. Like, you're looking for clues inside of a murder scene photo. But also, all I want to do is find the trophy and the riding crop and the muddy footprint that might be a clue about, wait, was there another person there? It's so intriguing. It's so fun. I love playing it. At the end of the day, just sitting on the couch, you know, that state of mind where you're not ready to go to bed yet. You don't want to be watching TV anymore. It's sort of just background noise. I want to be looking around my little island for clues. And that's why I love having June's Journey. Right now, I'm in the chapter where we are really uncovering some salacious information. There seems to have been a third person there the night of the murder. And that is not what we believed at the beginning. So, you know, I'm ready to figure out more about this mystery third person because I think it might be the key to everything. And so you better believe I'm about to dive back in, and you can do just the same. Escape reality and immerse yourself in the world of June Parker. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
This is Emily,
Henley,
and Sammy,
and you're listening to Too Scary, Didn't Watch.
Everyone, welcome to Too Scary Didn't Watch March bonus episode number one.
Woo!
That's what Woo-hoo! This is. That's what this is. That's where you are. That's where we are. Hello. It's nice to be here.
It's great to be here. And I feel like this episode is one that we have been talking about probably since like the inception of this podcast.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Mm-hmm. You know, we stick to mostly movie recaps, but had talked about at some point doing series, and we did Squid Game, but like truly from the beginning, I feel like people were like, oh, you should do
Haunting of Hill House.
The Haunting of Hill House.
Which is what we are doing now.
And we love Mike Flanagan. But we haven't done any of his movies, have we? Like Ouija?
We have. We did Hush.
Which one did we do?
Oh, Hush.
Oh, we did Dr. Sleep as well. So
okay.
We haven't done Oculus and we haven't done Gerald's Game. But yeah, we've done a lot. We've done a good amount of Mike Flanagan and I love him.
Yeah.
I love him.
Yeah.
I'll give you some stats about this series. Is created obviously by Mike Flanagan.
Mm-hmm.
Written by Mike Flanagan. Well, it's based on a book by Shirley Jackson. Actually, I didn't write down the names of all the writers. Are there multiple writers or did Mike Flanagan write all of it? I think it's like kind of a normal TV show where there's a writer's room and I just didn't write down the writers' names.
I genuinely don't remember.
No idea.
It feels like Mike Flanagan does a lot though, so I wouldn't be surprised if he just fucking wrote the whole thing. I feel like he wrote the whole thing with like one other person or something crazy like that.
It's a lot of writing. He seems like he loves writing.
Yeah.
Mike Flanagan loves writing.
Because we've talked about Midnight Mass and how there's just endless monologues in that. And mm-hmm. It's like he just loves to freaking...
He loves the written word.
Yeah.
There's too much... That pulled me out of it real hard.
But no, there's a lot of writers on this series.
Yeah, there are.
So I'm not going to name them all. Sorry, you'll be anonymous.
Sorry.
Go to the IMDb.
Beep, IMDb, IMDb.
But it is starring Mikhail Houseman, which I looked up how to pronounce it, and that is the correct pronunciation.
Nice.
It's spelled like Michael Huseman.
Mm-hmm.
Mikhail Houseman.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's from... He was in The Invitation, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep.
And yeah, Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm. Nashville.
Famously. Mm-hmm.
That's what I know him from. Nashville. Connie Britton's love interest in season mm-hmm, two or something.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Carla Gugino, Henry Thomas, Elizabeth Reaser, Oliver Jackson Cohen, Kate Siegel, Victoria Pedretti, and Timothy Hutton.
Wowee.
It has a 93% on Rotten Tomatoes. People love this show.
Mm-hmm.
And an 8.6 on IMDb. So, Henley, you watched this when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And what are your feelings on its scariness as a notorious scaredy cat?
So, I didn't think it was too scary, but I gotta say, I rewatched it. I'm like a broken record at this point, but after having kids, this show is a lot of kids, a lot of extreme trauma happening to these children.
Yeah.
And that hit home in a way that it didn't before. Especially the little boy. There's a little 6-year-old boy who is
the cutest child actor.
They chose the cutest kids on purpose. They're so cute. It makes me angry.
It's ridiculous how cute they are.
I tried to watch one episode once. Or maybe we were all hanging out and we were going to watch it. I thought it was too scary.
I think it's pretty scary. I mean, I watched it when it came out. But I think this speaks to the difference between what Henley thinks is scary and what I think is scary. And we've talked about this before, but like ghosts and demon shit like scares me a lot. And...
doesn't scare me as
much. It doesn't scare Henley that much.
It really doesn't scare me as much. I loved it because the drama within the family was so interesting to me. And I loved the whole concept of like a family being traumatized by being haunted when they were kids. Genius. Why hasn't there been more content like done like that before? Because it's so blurring the lines between like mental health and just, you know, what's you know, nature versus nurture. I loved it. And
yeah, I do think also that it like needs to be a series, like the mm-hmm. depth of character exploration that they do like couldn't have been done in a movie. So this is, I feel like, one of the first American Horror Story, I guess.
But those are so campy and outrageous.
Right. Right.
This one is real. Like, it's a real story about real relationships. And
yeah,
the acting's really good. The writing's good. I think it's great.
Okay, so you, Emily, watched a little bit and didn't make it through first episode. So this is all going to be fresh info for you.
Absolutely. I am excited to hear and be a part of the conversation.
Yeah, we've got a lot of ground to cover here. These are some dense episodes and we want to do them justice because they're very good.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be part one of a 3-part series.
Wow. Okay, let's freaking dive in.
Let's get into it. So episode one is called Steven Sees a Ghost. We start in a spooky mansion. This is Hill House. And we see a young boy waking up in the middle of the night and hearing siblings in another room, like, I don't know, upset about something. And he goes in and sees that in this room, there's a little girl and a little boy. These are the two cutest kids in the cast.
Yeah, it's disgraceful.
I like ranking them.
I think it's just because they're the youngest. So they're just like adorable.
It's really fun and good to judge everyone based on their exterior.
Yeah, that's what we do here.
And I like to do it. And mm-hmm. I feel good about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel good that people are listening to me do it.
Especially young children.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm like...
We're on board.
I have no regrets about anything I've said.
No, but I don't think it's bad to say that these kids are fucking cute as hell. It's insane. The boy has glasses that magnify his eyes. It's
get
just
out of here with
not
that.
Okay.
Get out of
they're
here
like
with that.
A full centimeter thick. Yeah,
like Coke bottle glasses.
It's exactly. Too much. It's too much.
Cute.
And the little girl in this room has had a bad dream about the bent neck lady.
Yeah.
And they all have I think heard about Bent Neck Lady before. They're kind of like, oh, Bent Neck Lady again. Like, this is a dream. This little girl's name is Nell. It's like Nell had another dream about Bent Neck Lady. Her brother that she is sharing the room with is Luke. They are twins. And eventually the dad hears the, you know, ruckus happening in this room that the kids are up, comes in, says, what's going on? This again, the bent neck lady, like, Nell, it's okay. It's just, you know, you're having a dream. Sometimes the mind can, when you wake up, have little remnants of dreams, and but it's going to be okay. We also get the context that they are in this house because they're fixing it up and then going to sell it. Mm-hmm. So the parents are, yeah, something in real estate that they have move house to house, fix up houses and sell them and live in them while they're fixing them up. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's because he says something like, you know, we're not going to be in this house forever. Mm-hmm. It's okay. And as he calms them down, gets them back to bed, is walking back to his room. We pass another room with another daughter in it. This is Shirley. She's talking in her sleep. There are five kids total. I don't think we see the third daughter in this scene, but there's also another daughter named Theo. Mm-hmm. Everyone gets back into bed, and he gets into bed with his wife, who is Carla Gugino, and they're, you know, talking about the kids again. And back in the twins' room, we see them going to bed, and we see from the shadows emerges a woman with a bent neck in shadows, mm-hmm. just moving towards Nell. And then we get our opening titles, but we see Bent Neck Lady is real.
Emily, this speaks to you because you're having some serious neck issues.
I'm the lady with bent neck.
And unfortunately, a hurt neck is a theme throughout this show in lots of ways. So, mm-hmm.
Is she bent neck? Like, what does this mean?
It's like her neck is bent at not quite a 90 degree angle, but pretty close. Like, it's just
like she was being hung, perhaps.
You know, we don't want to jump to any conclusions.
We don't want to jump to any conclusions. But that is about the correct angle.
Right. Okay. Great.
And so this title sequence, I feel like every title sequence in this year was this exact title sequence where it's just mm-hmm. like orchestral music and 3D renderings of various objects. It was like Westworld was like this.
Mm-hmm.
The,
yes.
The Crown. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just seems like everything of this
Game of
time
Thrones
was,
did it for a while, right?
Yeah. Game of Thrones, I feel like, was a little bit.
The map.
It like changed a lot, yeah. based on what was in the episode, which is at least a little variation on this. But yes, mm-hmm. kind of all, I feel like, standard title sequence.
I love a retrospective on title sequences throughout like the past 20 years.
Yes.
There was a Key and Peele sketch where they made fun of True Detective, I think. And they had like a funny opening that was making fun of the True Detective opening. It was like, oh, yeah, all these openings are like this. Like True Blood was similar. Yes. Like they're all like, like the like folksy music and then like disturbing country-esque backgrounds. Like,
right.
There's themes. They really stick to themes. And I mm-hmm. love to see people make fun of them. Just want to flag that.
What's the theme right now?
I don't know, but I will say, I just real quick. Have you guys watched Severance, the Apple TV show? Okay. Mm-hmm. This is a fucking cool thing that they're getting into, which is like, a really dynamic, like rhythmic animation, and it's an animation of Adam Scott's character, like going, like falling through all these different levels and like multiplying and then like becoming small and getting big. And it's, I love it. Like, what they can do with animation now is so compelling. And I feel like more and more openings are like leaning into that a little bit.
Cool.
Yeah.
I would also say another one that I feel like is getting more popular is just having the title without a title sequence. Like Euphoria, just like name of the show at one point and it doesn't have a title sequence. I feel like that's becoming a little more common too.
100%. Yes. And they still have the skip intro for sometimes, and it's like, it's
skipping
2 seconds.
A second. Yeah.
It's 2 seconds.
Okay. So then we cut to present day, which, by the way, sorry, in the opening, it says Hill House then. So in the whole series, we will be jumping back and forth in time between these kids' childhood and their present day adulthood. So first we meet adult Steven, who is the oldest child. And we see that he is interviewing a woman about having seen her dead husband's ghost. And we learn that he is a writer of ghost stories, essentially. Mm-hmm. And he has written a book called The Haunting of Hill House based on his own childhood experiences. But he is quite a skeptic of it all. And he reveals to this woman, you know, he never actually saw a ghost, and that this, it's a little bit of a fictionalized version of what happened to his siblings, what they claim happened. We just get in the sense that he doesn't totally buy into it. Mm-hmm. But this this woman that he's talking to really does, and is really interested in his family, and is like, I would love for your dad to write a book. So people in this world know the story of Hill House because he has written about it. He gets a phone call from Nell, his youngest sister, and doesn't answer it. We go back to the past and we see again Nell saying she saw Bent Neck Lady having what the parents think is a nightmare. She's too scared to sleep in her room now because that's where she sees the Bent Neck Lady. So her mom, what is the mom's name? Do you remember?
Oh,
wait, I think I have it right here.
Olivia?
Olivia, yes. She takes her downstairs. They're going to make up a little bed for her on the couch so that she doesn't have to sleep in her room. Mm-hmm. They get her all set up there, and Olivia makes a bed next to her, sleeps on the floor, lies down on the floor next to her until Nell falls asleep. And then once Nell is asleep, Olivia gets up, goes back to her own bed, and we see Nell on the couch alone, and her hand starts moving and her eyes open, and it looks like she can't move, and she's just kind of moving her fingers, and her eyes are looking around, and then she looks directly up and her eyes get really big, like she looks scared, and the camera pulls out and rotates, and we see Bent Neck Lady floating above her, looking down at her.
Mm.
Back to present day, we see, we're basically going to see each of the children, what their life is now in the present day. Next, we see Shirley, who is the second oldest, and her husband own like a what do you call it, funeral home?
A funeral home, yeah.
Yeah, and she does the
embalming?
Is that what that's called?
Like, I think
body
embalming.
Preparation.
Mm-hmm.
But in the first scene, we see her. She's talking to a kid who is preemptively saying that he doesn't want to see his grandmother's dead body. Mm-hmm. And she's helping him through that and saying, comforting him and saying, you know, I'm going to make her look exactly how she looked to you. It's going to be okay. So she's like feeling good about helping these kids come to terms with death.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And she looks down at her phone. She has a voicemail from Nell and listens to it. And Nell says that she's worried about Luke.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
We go back into the past. We see that there is a room in Hill House that has a red door that they refer to as the Red Room. And they just can't get into it. There's a groundskeeper. There's two like groundskeepers, Mr. and Mrs. Dudley. Is that their names?
Yeah, I think so.
And he has a master key that works to every room, but it does not work for the Red Room. So there's just a room in this house that they live in that they can't access.
We've all been there. We've all been there.
You got to break down that door.
Mm-hmm.
Horrifying. There's, it can't be a mystery room in my house. Hell no.
Cannot.
Absolutely.
No.
I think Shirley that is trying to get into it with this universal key. She can't get into it. And as she walks away, we see little feet walking around inside of this room. Back in the present day, we see Steven calling back Nell. She has an answer. He leaves a message saying you know, you said you were worried about Luke. I called his rehab. He's doing great. He's been sober for 90 days, just got his 90-day chip.
She having some sort of like twin connection to him?
Yes, that might be.
It's a twin thing.
It's a twin thing.
You don't put twins in something and not have twin shit.
You got to have a twin thing.
You got to do twin stuff.
Mm-hmm. Present day, we meet Theodora, who is the middle child, and she picks up a girl at a bar. She's like, she's looking really fucking cool. This is Kate Siegel, who is Mike Flanagan's wife.
Mm-hmm. Star of Hush.
Yep. And
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And she wears these leather gloves like that go up her arm. She looks very cool, but also like, what are these gloves about?
Yeah, the gloves are a thing. It's a thing.
And we see her, picking up this, locking eyes with this woman at a bar, taking her home. They hook up. And as soon as they finish hooking up, she like puts her gloves back on and it's like, I guess I'm a bit of a germaphobe. And the girl gets a little offended by that. And she asks the woman to leave. She's like, I've got work in the morning. Like, it's a little awkward at the end. She clearly got a lot of walls up. And we also see after she kicks the girl out that she lives in the guest house of Shirley and her husband's like funeral home area. So she lives on the property with them. The dad gets a call from Nell. We've just seen little clips of Nell looking scared, calling each of her family members a lot. This time we see Nell is in a car. She's looking like white as a ghost, very like she hasn't slept in days. She is in a car. It's raining and she calls her dad. He answers and she says, Dad, remember bent neck lady? He says, yeah. And she says, she's back. And her dad gets up and says, I need you to drive to Steven's. Like, Steven is closest to you. Like, whatever's going on, like, I want you with someone. I'm getting up right now. I'll drive out there. I'll see you in the morning. Okay, like, stay at Steven's and I'll see you in the morning. And she says, like, yeah, I'm home now. We see that she's not. She is in her car. And she's like, yeah, it's fine. Like, I love you. Yeah, I'll see you tomorrow. And hangs up. And we just see her looking at a bright light, looking very transfixed by something, clearly lying to her dad about whatever is going on. And then we see that she is parked outside of Hill House.
Mm-hmm. Which is like abandoned and...
Mm-hmm. Present day, it's like, like a rundown, nasty, nasty mansion.
No one's lived there clearly for a long time.
So the real estate venture didn't really pan out.
No, and clearly no one wanted to live there after they lived there, seems like. Huh.
Wonder why.
Then we cut back to the past of the dad waking Steven up in his room saying, we got to go, looking panicked. He's like, close your eyes as we, you know, don't you dare open your eyes. We got to get in the car. And Steven's like totally freaked out. But the dad picks him up. He's like, okay, 1, 2, 3. They run down the hall. We see a woman in a nasty nightgown across the hallway running like in a creepy ass way. I think Steven does open his eyes and see that, right?
I think he does a little bit, but then he's too scared to shut
them.
Blocks it out real quick. Shuts him real quick. Holding on to his dad. Like his dad's like carrying him like this. And he's like, what, 12 or something like that?
Yeah.
And the dad's just like running, carrying him, and Steven eyes shut real tight.
Yeah. They get outside and all the rest of the kids are in the car. All of them really confused and scared. They don't know what's going on. One of them yells at the dad, like, we got to go back and get mom. Like, mom's still in there. The dad says, that's not your mother. And they drive off. Back in present day, we see the dad calling Steven, saying like something's going on with Nell. You're closest. You need to get to Nell. We see shots of Nell, present day, in a nasty nightgown, just dancing around in the rundown rooms of Hill House. This place is, I mean, it's horrifying. It's like just a dusty, broken down mansion, and she is smiling and dancing and twirling through all of it. It's very unsettling. And then we see a clock, like an alarm clock, at 3:03, and all of the other siblings, all four of the siblings, we see quick shots of all of them bursting awake in bed. One of them says, "Nellie's in the red room." And they all look like they've just woken up from a nightmare. They don't know what happened, but it clearly all of them have felt something happen. Meanwhile, in present day, next night, Stephen is still investigating this woman's story about seeing her husband's ghost, and he's recreating the setting that she said it happened in. Like, you know, it was this time at night. I was laying in bed. I felt, I felt water and heard the car. The husband died in a car accident. And she's like, I heard the car crash. And he lays in her bed at the time that she said it happened, and water drips on him, and he sees that there's like a leak on the ceiling, and then he hears a car crash, and it's because they have recently removed a stop sign from the street outside. And so he basically disproves her sighting of her husband's ghost, and is like,
cool,
kind of proud of himself. I feel like he's such a skeptic that, yeah, he's just like, well, you see, what really happened is this, this, and this. And then we flash back to not the past of them as children, but something like, I don't know, 7 years ago or something like that, where Stephen first published the book, The Haunting of Hill House, and we see Shirley's reaction to it, and she is fucking fuming mad, like, how dare you publish this? This is, like, outrageous. I can't believe you would write this. Really furious about it. Then we flash back to the past, seemingly pretty soon after the dad took all the kids away from Hill House, and he's now in a lawyer's office, and I think Steven's in there with him, and the dad is looking very panicked and saying, like, how do I get out of this? So are they going to think that I killed her? It seems like Steven should not be in the room for this conversation, but he's, yeah, clearly, like, panicked about whatever went down at Hill House that night. We do not see what happened to the mom, but it seems like something bad happened, and the dad is, like, panicked about it.
Yeah, because the press, I mean, knows about it at this point, and right, it's starting to be talked about, and the dad doesn't look good.
No, he's not. It's not looking good. Well, it wouldn't
look good.
You always think it's always the husband.
Mm-hmm. I think that before ghost, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, first up is the husband, or boyfriend, or man involved in any way at all.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We see Stephen driving home from the woman's house that he was staying at, the ghost husband woman, and he calls his wife Lee, who's played by Samantha Sloyan, who was Bev in Midnight Mass, and I just love her. She's great. We have seen in a flashback, like, them happily married, and in this phone call it's clear that they are not together anymore. She's very short with him, is like, why are you calling me? And he says, you know, I think Nell might come to the house. Something's going on with Nell. He hasn't told any of the siblings that they've split up yet, but it's clear that they've been split up for a little while. Mm-hmm. We also get a scene where we see young Luke, the kid with the glasses, drawing in, like, a little treehouse or something. Mm-hmm.
It's a treehouse.
He's doing some creepy child drawings. You gotta have it in ghost and demon movies. It's a staple. And Stephen is asking him, like, who's this? And he says, it's the little girl I see in the woods. And there's a lot of drawings of just a little girl in the woods. And then back in present day, We're seeing Steven arriving back at his house, and he walks in and freezes when he sees Luke walking down the stairs of Steven's apartment carrying a bunch of Steven's shit. So it's Luke is robbing Steven, and he looks really bad. We were led to believe that he was 90 days sober. Luke says first thing, like, it's not what it looks like. But it's clear that Steven's like heard this before and is like, all right, like, sure. I need you to not take my iPad. I have a lot of work stuff on that. Let me give you $200 instead. You can take all the rest of the shit. Like, just don't take my iPad. And Luke is like looking really like pleading with him, like, it's not what it looks like. And he's like, yeah, I like, sure. Okay, here you go. Just leave. Just get out. And so Luke leaves, and Steven walks up to his apartment and sees Nell inside the apartment. And he immediately is annoyed with her and is like, were you in here when Steven or when Luke was robbing me? Like, did you just not say anything? Like, what's, like, that's fucked up. Like, you just let him do that. And he's kind of talking at her, and she's not really saying anything. She's looking really sad. And he's like, you know, Dad was saying that something was wrong with you. Like, what's going on with you and Luke? And then his phone rings, and it's his dad. And he answers it, and his dad sounds like he's very upset and has been crying. It's also kind of a broken, crinkly, like, line. It's like a creepy sound, and we just hear,
is she dead?
The dad say, it's Nell. She's dead. She killed herself. And Steven turns around like, well, who the fuck is this in my apartment? Nell is right there in his face, and her skin like turns gray and ghosty, and she opens her mouth and screams. And that's the end of the episode.
Episode wow, one.
I'm riveted.
Episode one.
I love that shit.
In the bag. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Oh, wow. Good job, Sammy. Good job, Sammy.
There's so much more content, Emily. Just fucking buckle up.
I love this.
Okay.
I get to binge a TV show all just while fucking sitting here.
We're binging it IRL. All right. Soy, episode two. I can't remember what it's called.
Open casket.
Well, let's freaking get into it.
To hear the rest of this episode, head on over to our Patreon at patreon.com/TSDW podcast and join us in Tony fucking Collette's inner circle. There you'll get access to all of our previous bonus episodes, which include The Omen, The Green Inferno, and even a Paddington 2 watch along. Wow, so something for everybody. You'll also get access to our Discord and to weekly trailer reaction videos, and you can vote in what we cover in our bonus episodes. It's a great place to be. You're going to love it. And if not, we will see you here next week with your regularly scheduled programming. We love you very much. Goodbye.